This lecture, entitled The Secret of True Happiness, is dedicated to the honor and merit of the extended Sasni and Vadnai families.
The subject of tonight is the secret of true happiness. So without further ado, Rabbi Ayers.
One of the most evocative words in the English language is the word happiness.
Accurate.
Yeah. What comes to mind when you hear that word? Vacation you've been planning for so long, maybe the thoughts of marital bliss for someone close to you, maybe your own children, grandchildren. Maybe it's just a little nachas from your kids after so many years of aggravation. Or perhaps that's new position you've longed for. To each of us, the word happiness denotes an answer to a prayer and a dream come true. But so very often the ideal of happiness is so elusive that even if we do achieve our stated goals and fulfill our lifelong dreams, the feelings of fulfillment and joy are often relatively short-lived. Often we have still an empty feeling, and before we know it, we start making new plans and dreams that we hope will provide one day the magic solution to the problem of achieving everlasting happiness. It's worthy to note that the founding fathers of this country also seem sensitive to this problem. The Declaration of Independence speaks of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Happiness, according to Jefferson, is something to be pursued, not necessarily achieved. The purpose of this lecture is perhaps best described by a folk tale that has been repeated by various sources, including Ripley's Believe It or Not, and in the stories of Rav Nachman of Breslov. According to this story, there lived a man in Poland that had a recurring dream that a treasure was buried at the foot of the bridge that led to the royal palace in Vienna. Vienna was the seat of the Habsburg Empire, the Holy Roman Empire. Night after night, he dreamt the same dream. Feeling that it was no mere dream, the man proceeded to take the long and arduous journey to Vienna in order to uncover the promised treasure. As he approached the bridge, he realized the scene was just as he had pictured it in his dream. Unfortunately, which is not included in his dream, the bridge was heavily guarded and it was impossible for him to start digging without being disturbed by the king's soldiers. After waiting there near the bridge for several days, hoping to find a moment when the bridge would be left unguarded, he finally gave up. Just before he was about to collect his things and trudge back to his home in Poland, he was approached by one of the sentries. "I've noticed you've been spending time here for the last few days," the sentry asked him. "What are you doing here?" The dreamer, feeling he had nothing to lose, unburdened himself to the sentry and told him the whole story about the recurring dream. Hearing the story, the sentry laughed and he said, "Dreams? You can't rely on dreams." "Why," said the sentry, "I also have a recurring dream. I keep on dreaming of a person in a village in Poland," and he named the name of the village, which was the listener's village, and the person's name, which was his name. It says, in that dream, says there's a buried treasure in that person's backyard. "Now, do you think I'm going to trudge all the way to Poland just for a dream?" The man thanked the sentry very warmly, went back to Poland, to his hometown, to his backyard, dug up the backyard, and found the buried treasure. That's the folk story. The moral of the story is, this is not sure if it's true or not true, but the moral of the story is, we often have to travel far and wide just to realize that the real treasure has always been waiting for us in our own backyard. The purpose of this lecture is to help us find happiness where we would least expect it, within ourselves. This lecture has added significance tonight. This is the day right before Rosh Hashanah. We all hope and pray for a happy new year. This is the theme of our greeting cards and our wishes to our friends. The truth is, however, what we should be praying for is a new year full of blessings. Happiness, as we just said, is something within ourselves and within the reach of all of us here tonight. And I hope after hearing this lecture, all of you will leave here with a heightened feeling of happiness. As you see from the first page of your handout, I hope everybody has a handout, just to be easier to follow. I've divided this lecture into five parts. The first letter of each section spelling the acronym, HAPPY. But before I begin, I'd first like to summarize the main points of this lecture. I'm going to go into detail, but just to have a sense of where I'm headed, I'd like to summarize really the main points of this lecture. First and foremost, the key to happiness is to formulate a vision and a sense of purpose and to work towards making it a reality. It'll add, if you have that sense of purpose, it'll add a new sense of dimension, of meaning to your life. You'll have something to look forward to. Every day you're going towards that goal. And life will become more exciting and eventually worth living. According to the famed Gaon of Vilna, the foremost rabbinic scholar of the modern era, the word simcha, happiness, is associated with the of a positive outlook. You're looking forward to something. It's the joy of anticipation. There are many synonyms for simcha, for joy, and they all mean something slightly different. The particular word simcha, according to the Vilna Gaon, is the joy of anticipation. You're looking forward to something. And that's really the H of happiness. The happiness that comes with the joy of purpose. You're working towards that goal. That's the H. The second point is that happiness goes hand in hand with an appreciation of all that you've been blessed with. Each of us are blessed with untold treasures. If we stop and appreciate them, we'd be all the wealthier for it. So the A of happy is because attitude and really appreciation. The third point is even the negative parts of our lives, at least many of them, are actually blessings in disguise. If we only have the proper faith in God, we realize that so many of the negative experiences of our life are actually stepping stones to greater sensitivity and greater heights. We stop concentrating on the negative and begin to view them also in a positive light, we would also add untold happiness to our lives. That's the first P of happiness, which is present. That all of our experiences are actually God's presence to us. The fourth point is that besides the fact that happiness is its own blessing and reward, it's also the gateway to many other blessings such as good health and even divine inspiration. So the P of happy, the second P, is prophecy. And finally, the fifth point of this lecture is the greatest detriment to happiness, or one of the greatest detriments, is trying to be someone that you're not and living your life based on somebody else's expectations rather than being yourself and living to your own potential. So the why of happy is you being yourself. Now that I've really told you the whole lecture, but I'd like to cover it in a little greater detail. And it starts with the H of happiness. As we stated before, happiness is associated with purpose. One of the survivors of the Holocaust was a doctor by the name of Viktor Frankl. In the concentration camps, he came to the realization that those prisoners that had a purpose in life were more likely to survive. They had an ideology, they had a purpose. There's a reason for them to be alive. After the war, he incorporated this insight into a whole new school of psychotherapy, which he termed logotherapy. from the Torah's view of life, besides for a specific purpose, and we all have our own specific goals, in general, the ideal of every human being is to grow spiritually and to improve the world about us. For a Jew, in addition, there's a special covenantal relationship. A covenant is a bris, a treaty, that we have with God to fulfill this mission. That's why we're called B'nai Bris, B'nai Brith. We're members of this covenant. It's the contract, again, to grow spiritually, walk in God's ways, and to touch this world. And that, according to the Torah, is the ultimate purpose of life. And happiness, therefore, is an expected outgrowth of this. The first citation, which is on your second page, which we quote from Deuteronomy, is really dealing with a section that deals with the curses of the Torah. This is really part of the covenant. If you keep the Torah, there's blessings. If you don't, there's curses. In the middle of these curses, and it says, and we have this underlined in the English, because you didn't serve the Lord your God with joyfulness and gladness of heart for the abundance of all things. In other words, I gave you everything. And it wasn't that you didn't serve God. But you did it begrudgingly. You just had to do it. You didn't do it with the joy which really comes with opportunity, with purpose. And the curse is, therefore, you shall serve your enemies, which the Lord shall send against you in hunger and in thirst and in nakedness and in want of all things. Shall put a yoke of iron upon your neck until he has destroyed you. Which, unfortunately, which is a recurring theme in Jewish history. But what he's saying, the covenant is, I'm giving you opportunity. You should seize that opportunity. And you should serve God. I mean, the service of God is that sense of change yourself and change the world. That's the mission. And do it with the joy that comes with a sense of purpose. The best analogy with the idea of service and joy would be governmental service. You know, in governmental service, we know of civil service. Our politicians are civil servants, those that are hired, those that are elected. But they serve the community. Then there's military service. There's those who work, who serve our country in defending this country through the military. And there are several branches of the military. There's the Army, the Navy, the Air Force. But the elite branch of the armed services are the Marines. I don't know if you've seen, if you've been involved, if you've seen pictures of what boot camp is like. And in the Army, boot camp is Snishkin Yontif. You know, it's no holiday. It's tough. But it doesn't compare to boot camp in the Marines on Paris Island. For those who go through it, it's like Gehenna. It's like going through hell. But once they're finished, they have a sense of purpose, a sense of pride, l'esprit de corps. They're the Marines. They're the ones who are appointed, who self-appointed, to serve this country in an unusual way. That's a sense of the simcha that you have, because you're special and you have a mission. In a certain sense, to make a parallel, the Jews are God's Marines. God's concerned with the entire world, but we're the Marines. And it's interesting, many of the blessings that we make all kinds of blessings. Blessings for the appreciation for the experiences of life. We can see, we can walk, but there are special blessings that we make for responsibility. Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvoso v'tzivonu, you sanctified us with your commandments, and you commanded us to do this or that. We come with an appreciation. Thank you for giving us this opportunity. You know, there are many Jews who came to these shores over the last 120 years, almost 130 years. many of them, at least when they initially came, were determined not to compromise their faith. But even those who were determined not to make that compromise, relatively very few of them were successful with the next generation. And there are many reasons. There wasn't the yeshivas that we have today. There wasn't the infrastructure, the education. Even the educators were poorly trained as being educators to make study exciting. But there was another factor that Moshe Feinstein pointed out. He was the great authority of Jewish law who lived in this country, in New York City. He died in approximately the year 1985. And he said the problem, at least one problem he isolated, was it was a common phrase amongst Jews who were immigrants. So shvel tzayne yid. It's difficult being Jewish. And when kids hear that, how difficult it is, he goes, what do I need this for? It's so difficult. Someone told me, just the other day, that in school, they have, you know, in the day schools, they take turns when the kids are very, very little to practice for Shabbos. So the boys and the girls take turns who's going to be the father and the mother on the Shabbos table. This is a mock Shabbos table, you know. So they had one little kid who's supposed to be the tati. You know, he's the father. He's supposed to make kiddush, you know. There's the mommy. I guess she puts on a tichel. You know, who knows what they do there, you know. So he's practicing like what he sees at home. So I guess he brought in from home a bathrobe, you know, to look, you know, fancy. He sits on the chair. He makes this statement in Yiddish, and he says, "Oy, hob ich gehat a shvere vokh. Boy, did I have a difficult week," and he falls asleep. That's his picture of, you know, his father on Shabbos. That's not the picture that will inspire your children. But there's the lack of tachas asher lo evadeta as Hashem alekecha b'simcha v'tuv levach. You didn't serve God with joy. There's just another aspect, which is it's taken from a Kabbalistic viewpoint, but it's an important one to take into account. Kabbalistically, on a mystical level, everything we do makes a difference. It changes the world, changes the cosmos. Every one of us has a tremendous gift, a tremendous power. Every mitzvah that we do, every time we say hello to somebody, we make the world a little better. Not only have you impacted on that person, but you've sent vibrations across the cosmos. The world is a better place. Person has that sense of power. You know, I really count. On another aspect, not just the cosmos, we all Jews are connected to each other. Again, a Kabbalistic sense. We're one soul. How one is affected, the other is affected. There's a story that's told Rabbi Saul Salanter. He was a leading rabbi in Lithuania 150 years ago, and he told his students that were in Lithuania, in Kovno, Lithuania, to be careful how they spend their time. It was to use their time constructively. Because when you fall, on what level you're holding, but you get a little cooled off, you fall. We're all one soul. There's a Jew in Paris who's barely Jewish, who's contemplating assimilation. And when it cools, your ardor cools off for you in Lithuania. That Jew's ardor cools off in France. But for him, it's a decision, should he remain a Jew or not. Like in Yiddish, he says, as mebatelt in Kovna, when you waste your time in Kovna, shmat men op in Paris. Then they convert in Paris. Because we're all one soul. You know, there's a story that's told and has roots in a medrash about someone who was going on a boat. And by his seat on the boat, he brought a drill. And he was drilling, you know, he was drilling by his... So someone asked him, what are you doing? If you make a hole, says, this place, the thing will happen. Listen, I don't tell you what to do by your seat. Don't tell me what to do by my seat. But the truth is, we're all in the same boat. You know, if it leaks in one part, it's going to leak all over. And that's really that sense that therefore says, I make a difference. We're holding, says, the day before Rosh Hashanah, there's a judgment. We individually are judged. Our city, our country is judged. The world is judged. Judgment, there's a composite picture of the world. What you do could tip the scales, not just for yourself, could tip the scales for the entire world. So what you do is really counts. It's important. So I just, again, just wanted to share with you, you know, that idea that every individual should develop, cultivate a sense of purpose. But in a general sense, there's the purpose of humanity, of being on this earth, becoming a more spiritual person, closer to God, making the world a better place and a world closer to God. And specifically Jews, that's the covenant, that's our mission. And we have a sense of mission and purpose. There's a happiness that comes, you know, I'm worthy. There's a purpose for my life. That's the H of happiness. The A of happiness is attitude. And we quote here from the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Ezehu Asher, who is considered a wealthy person, Asomeich Bechel Goy, who is happy, appreciates his lot in life. You know, there are many reasons for not being happy. A person doesn't have the income that he position he would like to have. Feeling inadequate, you're frustrated. But on the other hand, if one looks at what he does have, generally people who are driven, who are wealthy and driven for wealth, have tremendous needs. You know, it's like someone who's a drug addict. He's an addict for crack cocaine. And maybe the first time he took crack, it was Gan Eden. It was heaven. Maybe the second time. After a while, he really needs it. He can't live without it. Hasameach bechelko, a person who's happy with his lot, has less needs. He appreciates what he has. And in a sense, according to the Mishnah, the less we need, the wealthier we are. In Jewish life, there are many times, many opportunities to just stop and think and appreciate how fortunate we are. Wake up every morning, there's a bracha, says Pakeach Ivrim, I could see. There's a bracha, says there's a blessing, Malbisha Rumim, I'm clothed. Do every person ever stop to think that he has clothing? It's an amazing thing. You have dignity. It says there's Matir Asurim, you can move. There are people, you know, who wake up Chas V'Shalom, wake up paralyzed. You can move. You can stand up. You can walk. These are amazing things. It's really part of the blessings of the morning. But if a person stops and thinks, you know what? We really may be wealthier than we really think. You know, if we only appreciate this, Shabbos is a tremendous opportunity just to stop and think. You know, the author, there was a very famous work in the early, mid 1700s by Moshe Chaim Luzzatto. He was a great rabbinic scholar, this is Mekubal, a Kabbalist. And he wrote this book, which is really accessible for everyone, called Mesilas Yeshorim, The Path of the Just, of the Upright. And in it he describes the tactics, you know, that Pharaoh used when the Jews were complaining that, you know, about freedom. Moses came to Pharaoh and he says, you know what, they're thinking too much. You got to make them work. And that's the story, you know, the biblical story, that they weren't given the straw and they had to fill the same quota, and plus they had to provide their own straw. They had to work beyond their capacity, because Pharaoh knew as long as they're working, they're not thinking. And if they're not thinking, they have no desire for freedom. They're just so, there's this rut, and they just can't stop. Shabbos is a time that we stop, and we can think, and we can walk, and we can just observe nature. You know, our cell phones are shut off, our fax machines are. We can just enjoy. I remember one of the prized memories I have is walking hand in hand as a little boy with my father to shul on Friday night, and it was right before davening, so it was sunset, and Los Angeles is pretty flat, so you see sunset, you really see the sun, you know, as you walk. It's just beautiful, the sunset, just walking, you know. But we have to, if you want happiness, you have to take the time to appreciate. So the H of happiness is related. True happiness is a sense of mission. You're going someplace. Connected to it is the idea of H, of A, which is the attitude, which is the appreciation, which takes us to the next one, the next P of the happy, which is present. And here I quote a story which we quoted in a previous lecture here about Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva always used to say, was in the habit of saying, everything that God does is for the best. And you could read it in the handout yourself. And he told over a personal story that he was on the road and he stopped by a town for lodging. And he was in, this is antiquity. He carried his things on a donkey. He also had a lamp with him, with tinder, you know. He had a rooster with him. And he went from door to door. There was no inn, or it had been filled. Someone to take him in. No one wanted to take him in. And he was forced to sleep the night in a forest which is near the town. And in the middle of the night, a lion, which was common in that time during antiquity, came and devoured his donkey. So now he has nothing to carry his belongings. A cat came and ate his rooster. A wind had come beforehand and blown out the lamp. So he's totally in the dark, without anything. He has nothing with him. But in the middle of the night, marauders, brigands, had came to that town. It was a lawless era, something like Afghanistan. They came in the middle of the night and took all of them, all of the townspeople, as slaves. And thinking over that story, he told his students, you know what? If they would have taken me in, what would have happened to me? And if, even after having not taken me in, if they saw the lamp in the forest, or they had heard the braying of the donkey or heard the crowing of the rooster, they would have come over and I would be history. On the surface, sounded looked terrible. But in hindsight, it was the greatest blessing. And in the previous lecture, we told over a story that happened to Rav Isaac Ozband. He's from one of the Rosh Yeshivas, one of the heads of the yeshiva in Telz in Cleveland. He studied as a young man in the Telz yeshiva in Lithuania. And when he was escaping from the Nazis, and basically the Nazis came to Lithuania, exterminated almost the entire country, killed all the faculty and the student body of the yeshiva in Telz, there was a group that wasn't there at the yeshiva at the time, and they were fleeing. And they got tickets on what was the last train departing from Lithuania to Russia. Actually, Lithuania had been annexed by Russia at that time. And they got the tickets, and it was packed, the train. And they came to the first car that people did not want to let them in. They came to the next car, and they were going towards the engine, which was in the front. And they finally, I believe it was the last car, people saw them, the yeshiva buck, whatever it is, they made room for them, and there were 16 of them, pushed them in, and the train left with them on it. As they are going, the German Air Force, Luftwaffe, came and bombed the train. It didn't bomb the engine, but it hit one of the middle cars. The train had to stop. The engineer of the train had to disjoin, and there's the damaged cars, and with just one or two cars, with a few cars, kept on going. The Nazis came shortly afterwards and killed all of the people, all of those who had survived the bombing, and killed them all. Again, it says, if the first car would have let him in, the second car, third car, fourth car, it'd be nothing. It says, the Unglück, what seemed to be the tragedy really saved his life. And again, you just... It's the idea of there's difficulties in life, but you never know. You know, there's a beautiful mushel, beautiful analogy that's told of a tailor. If someone walked into a tailor shop, never saw, and all he knew was to get a suit right off the rack. He wanted to go to a tailor shop and see how do they do it. So he asked the tailor, do you mind if I, just sit down and watch how you're doing this? It's fine. Just don't disturb me, but you can watch. And he saw as he took, there was a big bolt of cloth, and he measured it, and he cut it, and he sized it out and started cutting here and cutting there. And the person said, what are you doing? It's a beautiful piece of cloth. What are you cutting? Just wait. And he was cutting and cutting. He couldn't understand what he was doing. But finally, after he sewed the whole thing together, he saw there was a beautiful suit. Once you see the final product, you can understand in hindsight. Unfortunately, we don't always have the benefit of hindsight. That's why you need faith. But there's this idea to realize that much of what would be considered the difficulties of our life are really presents. There's a story, again, associated with the Holocaust. This was the end of the war. The Russians, the Allies, were about to overrun the camps, which they did. In one particular camp, the Nazis, this is right before the Allies were about to come, they gave a loaf of bread, which they had never given before, but they gave a loaf of bread to each one of the surviving inmates. And the people had opportunity to eat bread. And there was one of them, who took the bread. And there was another man, evidently out of desperation, of starvation, wanted this fellow's... He also wanted two loaves of bread, not one. And they fought over the loaf of bread. And the other man, evidently he was stronger, whatever, hit the man... And he fell over, and the man hit his head and was unconscious. And of course, the other man stole his loaf of bread. But when that man came to, in other words, he finally, he came to after being unconscious. He looked around the scene. It was like out of Jonestown. They were all dead. The Nazis, before they fled, fed them poisoned bread. So the knock on the head saved his life. We don't know necessarily what the knock on the head that we get in life is. But it's important really to realize that what we're given in life, if we have the right attitude, really it takes appreciate, we can appreciate the good that we see in our lives. But it takes a sense of faith, since the difficulties in of our lives, since that it's also a present. I just reminded, just in this section, there's a very beautiful story about one of the great early Hasidic masters. His name is Rav Zusha of Anapol. And as the story goes, Rav Zusha of Anapol was a disciple of the successor, the founder of the Hasidic movement, whose name is the Baal Shem Tov, like the master of the good name. His successor, the one who led the Hasidic movement after him, was Rav Dov Baer, who was the Maggid of Mizrich. Mizrich was a town in Russia, Podolia, and he was the Maggid, he was the preacher of that town, who was called the Mizricher Maggid. He was a great, besides being an inspiring person, he was a great scholar, and many great scholars came to him. There's not just people in need of inspiration, but people who are really scholars and got from him as well. Two of those great scholars were two brothers that later on made a great contribution to the Jewish people. So there was this Reb Shmuel, Reb Shmelka, who became the chief rabbi of Moravia, the chief of Nikolsburg, Reb Shmelka of Nikolsburg. And his brother of Pinchas, this is Rav Pinchas Horowitz, or Shmuel Horowitz, Rav Pinchas Horowitz became the chief rabbi of Frankfurt, Germany. But before they had the position of chief rabbi, they were very close to this Mizricher Maggid. And the two of them came and had a question that they wanted their Rebbe, their master, to explain. There's a Mishnah in Brachas that says that one should make a bracha, a benediction, for when a person makes a benediction for bad tidings, he makes it in the same way as one makes a benediction for good tidings. You hear bad things, same benediction. And the Gemara, the Talmud asks, well, it's not the same benediction. You make a different benediction. When there's a simcha, a child is born, you make Baruch HaToiv HaMeitiv, says there's a blessing that's wonderful for the whole family, and God forbid if there's a tragedy, there's a death in the family, there's a blessing, Baruch HaDayin Emes. You say that God is a true judge, but it's really two blessings. So the Talmud answers, says no, the blessing of course is different, is expressed differently. However, the attitude is the same. Likpule besimcha, to accept it with happiness. The happiness, of course, does not mean joy. No one wants as joyous on a tragedy. But it's the sense of you're not lost. You know it's part of God's plan, and there's the hope for the future. But they didn't understand this, because what does it mean? How could you make the same blessing and the same simcha for bad news and good news? They asked the Rebbe, these two great scholars, to explain this to us. So he told them, says, I'm not the one, he told them, I'm not the one to answer this question. You have to go to my student, Reb Zusha. He can answer you. They found where he lived. He lived in extreme poverty. I mean, it's unspeakable, the poverty he lived. And they saw him, and they went and asked the question to him, and they said how to express the question, and they asked their Rebbe, their master, and the Rebbe says to ask you, and they were shocked by what they saw in the house. And he looked at them and he says, I have no, why did he send you to me? How can I answer such a question? I've never known a bad day in my life. That's why he sent them to him. But that's the P of present. The next P is prophecy. There's a benefit by being happy. Besides, it's its own benefit, of course. It's this positive attitude you have in life, the hope you have for the future, the appreciation you have, but it brings good health. A person who's happy feels better. He lives longer. How many is documented cases of the onset of all kinds of diseases that come because of stress? But in addition, there's the idea of prophecy. A prophet, how does he get to the level of prophecy? By putting himself in a state of happiness. The Gemara speaks about music. You know, sometimes you need a trigger. Not that the music is the happiness. Now, if you noticed before, you saw what was happening, you know, and what was going on. That's a trigger for happiness. But once you're finished dancing and you go home, it's the same home. You know, the dance is over. What it is, I don't know if you remember the old style cars, circa 1910, where they had the crank. You know, you had the crank. And it was only in 1915 that they invented the electric starter. And that was put only into a Cadillac. But originally, it was all the picture. You ever see these old pictures of the thing, of the cranking them up? Music, a nice night out, a beautiful experience, that's the crank. But ultimately, you have to get into the car and drive someplace. If you're just busy cranking, all you do is cranking. But you're not going anyplace. Right. Says McCranksach, you know. Yeah, but the idea is, so ultimately you have to have a change in attitude. But sometimes you need the thing to trigger that. And it all is a difference in attitude. You know, the Baal Shem Tov tells a beautiful story about how attitude counts. And he tells about an old man who was a Wasserträger. He was a water carrier. It was a hard job, you know. I think a cubic foot of water is 62 pounds. It's heavy. He got two of them, you know. And he used to go from place to place and go and pour it out and come back again. It was a very back-breaking, hard thing. And he was an old man. And the Baal Shem Tov saw this man muttering to himself how unfortunate he is. A man of his age that has to work such hard work. He should be retired already. You know, and he was really pitying himself. Sometime later, he saw the same man. The man was in a positive mood. And again, he was muttering to himself. I guess that's the cost of old age. You know, but he was muttering to himself. Saying, you know how fortunate I am? A man of my age, and I still have the strength to do this? How many people my age could do this? And you know, I'm independent. Other people like that, they have to be taken care of by their family. I make my own living. You know, nothing changed, he pointed out. No circumstances changed. He was the same man, same living, same health. The whole difference was the attitude. Really, and it's important, like, to have that attitude. So again, we just want to summarize what we have till now. The H of happy is that true happiness comes with purpose. That's the verse that I quoted. It says, because you didn't serve God with happiness, it says, when you had everything, there's a happiness that comes with service, with a mission, with a purpose. The A is the attitude, appreciation, what to appreciate what you have. P is in the negatives. Maybe it takes a faith. Maybe it's worthwhile to view your past and see maybe the things that you stumbled on were really the key to the untold blessings. The second P is prophecy, is that it's important even a prophet has to be in a state of happiness. And if you're not there, sometimes you need a catalyst to put yourself in that state. But of course, remember, it's only a catalyst. Ultimately, the state is based on your attitude. And finally is the why. Rabbi, so Abraham Twersky, wrote a very interesting book, and it was titled I Am I. And it began with a saying from, again, one of the great Hasidic masters from the mid-1800s. He was Menachem Mendel of Kotsk in Poland. And he had a statement as follows. He said, if I am I, because I am I. Is that me? Because I'm me. Who cares about the whole world? I'm me. And you are you, because you are you. You know? Then I am and you are. We're true, we're real people. But if I am I because you are you, I'm only me because of you. In other words, I measure myself the way you look at me, the way you would you judge me. And you are you because I am I. You're only you because of me. Then neither you are or I am. Because I'm not real. You got to be yourself. You can't measure yourself just how everybody else looks at you. You have to create your own sense of measurement. Part of the unhappiness of life, of course, is you want to be somebody else. You want to be what your parents say you should have been. You want to be what your neighbors or your peers. But everyone has certain God-given talents. And I quote here, because in the third page of the handout, you know, that, of the U, I quote a Gemara in Brachas, where it says that God made everyone to appreciate, the ability to appreciate what they have. In other words, if you're, if the world has, for example, there are tanners, people who are working leather goods, and those who work in the chemicals, it gives off an awful stench. And there are people who are perfumers, you know, who make perfume. The one whose profession is to be a leather maker enjoys his work. That's why he chose this. The smell doesn't bother him. He likes it, the creativity, whatever it is. He enjoys it. And the perfume maker enjoys what he is. Neither one necessarily is jealous of the other. Because God made it, you know, there's a something that you, each one of us has a path. You know, and if you're going on the path, in other words, there's this general path. The general path thing doesn't change. It's basically is to be to try to be a more spiritual person, to try to help the world both physically and spiritually. That mission is really for every human being, and especially for Jews. But everyone has a specific path. And you got to be yourself. Don't try to be somebody else. You'll always be miserable. You know, we say in the davening, and we say it in the weekday prayers, we say it in the Shabbos Yontov prayers, we say, V'sein chalkenu b'sarasecha. Give us, it says, our portion in your Torah. And many explain, everybody, it's a big Torah. Everybody has a portion in it. Everyone has, in all of that thought, there's the me of it that hits my heart, that I'm really good at it and inspires me. Give it my full portion. Because I have my portion. It's mine. So there's the idea of find yourself. And finally, I want to end off with the following story. In Russia, Jews were allowed to live was known as the Pale of the Settlement. In other words, really not Mother Russia, but in Ukraine, Poland. The Poland was controlled by the Russians. White Russia, Belarus. This was really not the original Russia. They had conquered this area, and they let the Jews stay there. But Mother Russia, that really did not, from the time of Ivan the Great, did not allow Jews really in there, had a policy that Jews really had to, if they wanted to come, had to immigrate. In other words, had to show, just like in the United States, that they will be gainfully employed and really have something that will add to the economy. Because if someone from Canada wants to become a citizen of the United States, it's not so simple. They say, well, we have enough citizens. You're not a refugee. You know, what can you do? You know, if a hospital wants to hire this person, the hospital has to show why this person has specific talents that can't be replaced. So it was very difficult for Jews to live in Mother Russia. At the time in Tsarist Russia, the capital was St. Petersburg. And in the late 1880s, one of the chief rabbis of St. Petersburg, his name was Rav Yitzchok Blozer, Rav Itzel Petterberger. But because the people in that city had to have special skills, professions, there were those who had businesses, or wealth, men of wealth, it was a wealthy community. And therefore, there are many letters that pass the rabbi's desk asking for help, because perhaps his congregation, his community, were able to help them. There was one particular member of their community that was very wealthy. He was a major supplier to the Tsarist army. But he was extremely stingy. He was very pious, an Erlichayid, he was very frum, but terribly stingy. All efforts he tried to get him to contribute, it was not successful. There was one particular pressing need that came upon the rabbi's desk. He had just asked the community as a whole for something else. He couldn't go to them immediately again. To this wealthy person who was the supplier for the army, he hadn't had success in the past, but, you know, let me give him a try. Let me try again. You never know. Maybe you get him at a good moment. He came to his home, and his wife said he's still in shul. He didn't come back yet from davening. He was a very pious person. So the rabbi went to the shul, and lo, he was still in the shul. He was still in the and he was saying Tehillim. He was saying Psalms. So the rabbi came and sat near him, and the person noticed that the rabbi was waiting for him, and he finished up what he was saying. And he to the Rebbe, you know, well, how can I help you? So the rabbi looked at him. He says, you know, you're familiar with the army, right? He says, yeah. And you know that there's various divisions of the army. You know that there's the infantry, there's the artillery, there's there's a cavalry in that time. There was the engineering corps, building bridges, signal corps, communications. There are various segments of the army. What would happen? Yes. If, let's say, someone in the artillery corps decided on his own, you know what? I don't like being in artillery. It's too loud, breaking my eardrums. There's no action, you know. I saw all the posters, you know, with the guys with the bayonet, you know, thrusting. I want to join the infantry. That's where the real action is. So on his own, he packs up his bags, says, leaves his barracks, and goes to the barracks of the infantrymen, finds an empty bed, puts his stuff in a locker. What would happen? He says, what would happen? Probably be court-martialed. You can't leave your position. Even though it's not in the midst of fighting, but it's still. If you want to change, and there's a whole procedure how to change. You have to ask your commanding officer. A special letter has to be given to the head of the army itself. You know, to review your request. You can't do it on your own. So the rabbi continued, looked at this man. He says, "You know what? In God's army, there are also divisions, not infantry and artillery. But there are divisions, there are scholars, there are learned people who teach, who spread Torah. There are philanthropists, not that learned, but that God bless them with the wherewithal to make a difference in the world. And there are people that are neither nor scholars nor philanthropists, but they're very pious Jews. And they say Tehillim, they say Psalms. So they, through their prayers, they'll help. You know, you're a deserter. You should be court-martialed. If God had wanted to put you in the division of the Tehillim Zuggers, of those who say Psalms, He wouldn't have given you all the wealth and influence that you have. He gave you all of these blessings because he put you in the division of the philanthropists. You're a deserter. You shouldn't be Saint Tilim over here. You should be working together hand in hand with the community leaders. How can I help? How can I make a difference? That's the story. It's a beautiful story. Each one of us really has to know where we belong. We're all part of this army. But what division are we? And part of it is what we feel when we look at the talents we were given, the wealth that we were given. And to say that the why is you have to be yourself. And ultimately, we went through this happy, the H, true happiness is having purpose. A is appreciating what you have. P is even the negative, realize it's a present from God. P, realize the value of being in a state of happiness, and sometimes you need that trigger to bring it to you, and why you have to be yourself. We are now, this is on the threshold of the Rosh Hashanah, a new year. We said, as we said before, what we're praying for is God's blessings. But the happy new year says it should be happy right now. And if you're happy right now, you'll be happy in the new year, Mirtz Hashem, throughout your whole wonderful life. Yeah.